Good evening. Millions on lockdown in China as the deadly coronavirus rears its head in the United States. And Trump becomes the first president to speak at the March for Life in D.C.
Unborn children have never had a stronger defender in the White House.
And Pacifica loses an important battle in a California court. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with some of the news for Friday, January 24th, 2020. The Chinese New Year is tomorrow, on Saturday, the 25th of January, but the celebration will be guarded this year. In China, the country expanded its lockdown against the deadly new virus to an unprecedented 36 million people and rushed to build a prefabricated 1,000-bed hospital for victims Friday as the outbreak cast a pall over the Lunar New Year. It's the country's biggest and most festive holiday. The number of confirmed cases around the world climbed sharply to more than 850 with at least 26 deaths, all of them in China. On Wall Street, stocks slumped amid fears over the widening crisis, with the Dow Jones Industrial losing 170 points. Transportation was shut down in Wuhan, the city of 11 million at the epicenter of the outbreak, and in at least 12 other cities in central China's Hubei province, encompassing a population bigger than New York, London, Paris, and Moscow combined. At least three cases, one confirmed in Washington state, have been found in the United States. And the Pentagon revealed today that 34 U.S. soldiers have been diagnosed with concussion or traumatic brain injury from a January 8th Iranian missile attack on their base in Iraq. The Pentagon spokesman, Jonathan Hoffman, on Friday.
So finally, I wanted to give an update on our service members in Iraq. This morning, the Secretary directed the Acting Undersecretary for Personnel and Readiness, Matt Donovan, to begin working with the Joint Staff to review our processes for tracking and reporting injuries, wounded in action, and casualties attributed to injuries. The goal is to be as transparent, accurate, and to provide the American people and our service members with the best information about the tremendous sacrifices our warfighters make. We will have an update on this review in the future. With regard to the numbers of recent injuries, here's the latest update. 34 total members have been diagnosed with concussions and TBI. 8 service members who were previously transported to Germany have been transported to the United States. They will continue to receive treatment in the United States, either at Walter Reed or at their home bases. They arrived this morning. 9 service members transported to Germany are still undergoing evaluation and treatment there. 1 service member transported to Kuwait received treatment and has returned to duty in Iraq. 16 service members who were diagnosed with concussion and TBI while in Iraq and remained in Iraq have already returned to duty.
Donald Trump had previously said the U.S. suffered no casualties from the attack, which was a reprisal for the United States drone strike assassination of the Iranian general Qasem Soleimani. Trump later downplayed the reported brain injuries.
Repeatedly to Americans that after Iran retaliated for the Soleimani strike, no Americans were injured. We now know at least 11 U.S. service men were airlifted from Iraq. Can you explain the discrepancy?
No, I heard that they had headaches and a couple of other things, but I would say, and I can report, it is not very serious.
So you don't consider potential traumatic brain injury serious?
They told me about it numerous days later. You'd have to ask the Department of Defense.
And the chair of the New York State Traumatic Brain Injury Services Coordinating Council, Michael Kaplan, said he was shocked at the ignorant statement made by Trump, adding that Trump was insulting and disrespectful to the thousands of military service members suffering from the signature wound of the Iraq-Afghanistan conflict. Meanwhile, the Trump administration warned California on Friday that it must stop requiring health insurance plans in the state to provide abortion coverage or risk losing federal money. The announcement came as President Trump, who is aggressively courting religious conservatives ahead of his reelection campaign, on Friday became the first sitting president to address the annual March for Life in Washington. He styled himself as a defender of religious liberty.
Found honor to be the first president in history to attend the March for Life. We're here for a very simple reason: to defend the right of every child, born and unborn, to fulfill their God-given potential. All of us here today understand an eternal truth. Every child is a precious and sacred gift from God. At the United Nations, I made clear that global bureaucrats have no business attacking the sovereignty of nations that protect innocent life. Unborn children have never had a stronger defender in the White House.
The thousands of anti-abortion protesters were met by a handful of counter-protesters, and no violence was reported.
You want to live in a handmaid's tale? You want to live in a handmaid's tale? Then keep sitting back. If you don't, this is the future. You're going to let these people have the future. Come to D.C. Drive out this regime.
Jesus loves you.
This is going to be the future if you don't act.
Sincera Taylor is a pro-choice activist. She's a WBAI host and writer for the website RevCom.us. Taylor, an advocate for what she calls the new communism, says despite the Jesus loves you claims of the anti-abortion crowd, they represent an existential danger to women's freedom.
For the first time in U.S. history, Donald Trump, as U.S. president, spoke live in person at the annual anti-abortion march for so-called life. It really should be called the March for Female Enslavement, because forcing women to have children against their will is a form of enslavement. And Donald Trump is actually further proof that the fight over abortion has never been about babies. It's never been about babies. You can tell this because most of the anti-abortion movement, almost all of it, is against birth control and sex education. But you can also tell it because they have found their champion in Donald Trump, a man who obviously has a very different view on abortion than they do, but he shares their hatred of women, their desire to enslave women, their desire to control women. There's really no difference between treating a woman like a sex object to be used and abused by men and treating women like incubators, breeding objects to be used as baby-making machines by a patriarchal society. So Mike Pence and his Christian fascist theocracy and Donald Trump and his whatever you want to call it, hedonistic white supremacy, bigotry, misogyny, they're a perfect marriage in this fascist regime, which is why we were here saying Trump Pence out now.
Were you actually by the area, by the mall where the people are gathering? Do you have any encounters with those people?
Oh, absolutely. We had two teams out today. One was out in the rally where Trump spoke, and they disrupted his rally and shouted in the middle of it, in the name of humanity, in the name of women, Trump Pence out now. Fetuses are not babies. Abortion is not murder, and women are not incubators. And they dared that, they braved that crowd, the refused fascism crew over there. And then we had another crew that was in front of the Supreme Court, which is where tens of thousands, actually hundreds of thousands of anti-abortion fanatics, really a fascist, Christian fascist social base of this regime marched by. And so we were surrounded by them. We were, you know, I have to say it's an unconscionable situation where abortion rights are hanging by a thread. Abortion is being criminalized across this country, and we are a hair's breadth away from losing Roe v. Wade, and it means nothing for many parts of this country already for women who need abortion access. And most people support abortion rights if they're sitting on their couches at home, while hundreds of thousands of anti-abortion Christian fanatics are marching in the Capitol. And this has to be reversed. People who don't like the crimes of the Trump-Pence regime, who don't want to see women enslaved by forced motherhood, denied the right to control their own reproduction and their lives, need to stand up now. People, we saw the same thing earlier this week on MLK Day. You had 22,000 armed to the teeth, overwhelmingly white supremacist bigots in Virginia marching, and nobody counter-protested them except for the Revolution Club. That was it. Everybody else ghosted. They went into hiding. Same thing today at the Capitol, at the Supreme Court. Donald Trump is speaking to hundreds of thousands of Christian fascist fanatics who want to enslave women, and very few people stood up. This has got to change.
Could it be because it's dangerous? I mean, it's dangerous. These people carrying guns and they're fanatical, and most people aren't in a position to expose themselves to that.
Of course it's dangerous to stand up to fascists, but people need to stop being so scared for themselves and start thinking about what happens to humanity if we don't stand up. Because cowering in the face of fascism has never stopped fascism. And we saw in Charlottesville, these people got organized and they came back stronger. And if you stay home and hide and run for cover and think about your own safety, what you're doing is guaranteeing that's what the future will look like for everybody.
Since Sarah Taylor is a pro-choice activist, she hosts We Only Want the World tomorrow, Saturday at noon on WBAI. Since Sarah Taylor will be talking about Trump's war against Iran. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In more impeachment news, ABC News is reporting they've reviewed a tape provided by the attorney for Lev Parnas, a recently indicted associate of Rudy Giuliani. The tape was made at a dinner at a Trump hotel attended by Trump, Parnas, and others. ABC reports that a voice that appears to be the president's tells the group he wanted to get rid of Yovanovitch. That is the name of Marie Yovanovitch, was the ambassador to Ukraine at the time. Trump eventually recalled Yovanovitch in May 2019. Months later, he pressured Ukraine's president to announce investigations of a company linked to the family of former Vice President Joe Biden. The alleged this for that or quid pro quo deal is at the heart of the Senate impeachment trial against Trump. House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff is one of the managers presenting the case against Trump in front of the Senate.
Washington News has reviewed audio that appears to show the president at a dinner in 2018 speaking about Ambassador Yovanovitch, saying, quote, take her out. Your reaction?
I saw that newspaper report or ABC report, and I don't have enough background to really to give you a response to it at this time.
Friday brought another day of long testimony in Trump's impeachment trial. New York Representative Hakeem Jeffries focused on the role of John A. Eisenberg, the lead lawyer for the National Security Council. Fiona Hill had testified to the House that Eisenberg told her that he was concerned about pressure on Ukraine for investigations of the Bidens.
Mr. Eisenberg ordered access restricted after multiple officials like Dr. Fiona Hill and Lieutenant Colonel Vindman advised him of the scheme to condition a White House meeting on phony political investigations. This strongly suggests that there was an active attempt to conceal the clear evidence of the president's wrongdoing. Instead of addressing the president's misconduct, Mr. Eisenberg seemingly tried to cover it up. Why did Mr. Eisenberg place the July 25th call summary on a server for highly classified material? Did anyone senior to Mr. Eisenberg direct him to hide the call record? Why did the call record remain on the classified server even after the so-called error was discovered? Who ordered the cover-up of the call record? Who ordered the cover-up of the call record? The American people deserve to know.
New York Representative Hakeem Jeffries. WBAI, closer to home story. WBAI and the Pacifica Foundation suffered a major setback in a California court on Thursday. Judge Frank Roche is presiding in the suit brought by board members involved in the takeover and shutdown of WBAI last October. Pacifica was represented by counsel Arthur Schwartz, who had led the legal battle to return WBAI to New Yorkers after a month of broadcasting canned banter from the West Coast that seriously impacted WBAI's fall fund drive. Schwartz says the lawsuit was brought to prevent recently elected Pacifica National board members from taking their seats.
The proceeding was about whether the judge was going to extend his deadline of February 1st to complete voting on some bylaw proposals that six members had made back in September, and secondarily to that, to stop the seating of elected board members who had been elected in various elections and whose seating would have put off implementation of the bylaw proposals if they were to pass for a year.
At issue is a bylaws change that would eliminate democratically elected boards at the five Pacifica stations and give new and unelected members power to control the broadcast air and potentially sell WBAI's license, which is worth millions. Schwartz again.
I haven't spoken to anybody other than the people in court who really support this particular change. And I'm limited to New York City, but apparently at all the local station boards, including San Francisco and Los Angeles, the two biggest, membership groups voted overwhelmingly no. So I don't really believe that it's going to get voted up. I think it's going to be overwhelmingly. Either it's going to overwhelmingly be voted no, or they won't have 10% of the members voting, which is required.
Pacifica Council, Arthur Schwartz. The decision clears the way for a vote at all five stations on the new bylaws proposal. And that's some of the news for Friday, January 24th, 2020. The news is produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. And we will be having tomorrow a special...
Next Friday,
a special broadcast with WPFW and WBAI on the bylaws proposal.
At 1 p.m.
At 1 p.m.
Thank you.